Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. For help with guest options, press star zero. The moderator has not yet joined the conference. Please stand by. The moderator has left the conference.
Hey, what's up, guys? John Finn here. We're going to get started in just a minute or so. Before we even get started, I want to just tell you guys I'm really excited because I'm going to be filming the video accompaniments to this product. As you guys know, you're going to get every one of these calls in, you know, a product form. And also, we're going to be recording a ton of these videos with real girls that have live demonstrations, live kind of footage of the Seduction Roadmap in action, and some really insightful interviews with the girls about why the Seduction Roadmap works, their take on pickup and stuff like that. So it's going to be really, really, really cool. Like this product is going to be expanding in a lot of cool ways. We've got three different girls coming in next week, so you're going to get a lot of different perspectives, and the product's going to be really big, actually, by the time we're done with it. So that's exciting, exciting stuff. You guys are going to be getting a lot of content throughout the 7 weeks, and then we give you the full product afterwards. There's going to be a ton of really, really, really interesting new information that you guys haven't seen anywhere else. And you also get an idea of how to apply the stuff in the real world, which is a very, very important part of this. So that stuff's coming up. We'll be in contact with all of you members through email about how we're going to be sending you those videos and audios and all that stuff that's coming up in the next little bit. The module should be up in the next, 24 hours. So look for that in your email in the next little bit. As always, we'll be sending you the transcript of this call in the next 4 days or so, and you'll be getting the audio download and the PDF within 24 and 48 hours. Cool. So with that said, I want to get started today talking about sexual attraction. Sexual attraction is a topic that is pretty, near and dear to my heart because it was something that I kind of came up with over the last 2 years, basically, since I started Sins of Attraction and formed my own company and really broke away from other methodologies. Because one of the things I noticed was that attraction is not this one-sided thing. Not all attraction is created equal. Not all attraction works to the same end. Not all attraction actually leads to sex. There's different types of attraction. And that was something that would really frustrate me because I would see, I'd see girls out with guys who were really boring and had bad personalities but were rich, or I'd see girls out with guys who, were really interesting but, they always ended up not going home with them, and I've seen students get attraction that, other gurus would say was going to lead to sex, and then I've seen it fail time and time again. So I really, a couple years ago, got me thinking about the idea of attraction and what kind of attraction exists and how to trigger it and how to kind of quantify this concept, because we all accept that in order to get from meeting a girl to having a sexual relationship, you need attraction somewhere. I would say, I say in my own teaching, it's not the first step. Social comfort is the first step. But you do need to build that attraction. And you need to build different types of attraction based on the situation. So the first thing I want to do here on this call is I want to explain to you what the different types of attraction are, what sexual attraction is, and then start teaching you how to trigger it and why it's different from the other kinds of attraction. So let's start with the first kind of typical community dating stuff attraction, which is what I like to call value-based attraction. This attraction is based on whatever value you have intrinsically or provide evidence of to the girl. This is where things like, you know, being rich, having a table, having, you know, social status and connections, having names you can drop, having a lot of interesting stories, having a lot of pre-selection. All that stuff comes down to the value that you can demonstrate to a girl, be it non-verbally, be it verbally, be it from her finding out from a friend, whatever it is, however you demonstrate your value, that's value-based attraction. And value-based attraction can take you really, really far, but it's not inherently sexual. Because the basis of the attraction has nothing to do with sex. It has to do with you possessing something that the girl is either jealous of, wants herself, or sees immediate benefits to being around. So that's value-based attraction. We're not going to talk at all about value-based attraction in this call. There's plenty of other material out there. In fact, I'd venture to say that all the other dating material that other gurus teach is 90% value-based attraction. 90% how to show a girl that you're cool or that you have cool stuff and access to cool things, right? Second form of attraction is emotional attraction. And emotional attraction is something you'll see a lot. I think you've probably heard it referred to as buying temperature. You've probably seen it when there's a spike in energy and the girls are dancing around or you say something funny and the girls laugh and hit you, or you tell a story and the girl's really into it and it's really, really emotionally intense. You generally are going to see this more in situations where girls have been drinking, more in situations that allow outlandish behavior like bars and nightclubs, less during the day. But the emotional attraction refers specifically to the emotional temperature of the interaction, how much she likes you emotionally in that instant. Now, the problem with emotional attraction is that it's transient. Emotions are feelings, which means that just because a girl has emotional attraction for you at 9:15 on a Saturday night doesn't mean she's going to have an emotional attraction towards you at 9:25 or the next day. Emotional attraction is transient. It's good for certain situations. Emotional attraction is great for greasing the wheels, as I like to call it. Let's say you're trying to get a girl to move with you. If you can pump her emotions up and really emotionally stimulate her right before you suggest a move or right before you suggest going back to your place, or if there's any obstacles or distractions, if other guys come in, emotional attraction is really good for getting the girl's attention back. It's really good for kind of blowing guys out. It's really good for dealing with obstacles or objections. But it's not the whole basis of what you want to use to attract and pick up women. And lastly, that brings us to sexual attraction. And sexual attraction is an unconscious and physical process that cannot be stopped. Sexual attraction is the most powerful of these attractions because there's an actual unconscious physical process that occurs every time a woman becomes sexually attracted. In layman's terms, they start to get flushed, they get wet, and there's actually nothing that a girl can do to stop the attraction from happening if you do the right things to trigger it. The reason for that is something called triune brain theory. And triune brain theory basically states that we don't have one brain, but our brain is put together of three separate functioning brains. And it's a really interesting theory because it holds that these three brains are all responsible for different parts of our actions. So you have the rational brain, which is your neocortex, right? And your rational brain handles intellectual tasks. It handles facts, figures, experiences, but the things that require a high level of cognition. This is where you do math and physics and figure things out, and accounting and balancing your book sheet and all of that, and figuring out how many miles per gallon you're getting. All of that stuff comes from the rational brain, the neocortex, right? When people say you're very like right brain, you're talking about the rational brain, the neocortex. And that sits on the top of the brain, right? That's the newest, most freshly evolved part of this brain. And then you have the intermediate brain, which basically controls our limbic system, which is our complex emotions. These are things like anger, jealousy, emotions that have more than just a primitive jolt, right? These are things like, you know, how you feel about someone. Whether or not you like someone is an emotion. Whether or not you're sexually attracted to someone comes down to the last version of the brain, the primitive brain, which has to do with self-preservation, aggression, mating, all of these unconscious processes, regulating body function, regulating breathing, regulating pulse, regulating all of that stuff. And the primitive brain is where sexual attraction takes place, which is why sexual attraction is the most powerful, because it's a primitive urge. It's not something that has had to evolve. It's something that human beings have been doing since the dawn of time. It's how the species propagates. So there's a lot of things that we can do that will actually trigger that primitive brain, that part of her brain that the woman doesn't have any control over, and that says, I need to mate now, and that actually starts that physical, unconscious, sexualizing process to where eventually the girl can't think of anything but sex, because the primitive brain is by far the most powerful. It by far has the strongest urges. It controls things like hunger, aggression, anger, murderous rage, all that stuff that is really what makes us more animal than human, whereas the other two parts of the brain work to make you more human. So that's really why I got interested in sexual attraction, was I learned about triune brain theory, and I learned that sexual attraction, the urge for sexuality, the urge to mate, so to speak, is a function of the primitive brain, which made me think, okay, well, we're doing things that are emotional or value-based, and emotions, right, emotions go with the intermediate brain, and value-based attraction works with the rational brain. It's a list of reasons why you should be with that person, right? You should be with me because my ex-girlfriend was really hot, and I am a man of value, and I'm a protector of loved ones, and yada, yada, yada. But that's intellectual, right? That's the least powerful, most new part of our brain that we're accessing there. Then you have your buying temperature, your teasing, your stuff like that, which, you know, hits the emotions and hits the, you know, your grounding sequence and all that stuff. It hits the emotions, which is the second part of the brain, but it ignores that primitive brain. So the stuff we're going to be talking about today is stuff that's designed to hit that primitive brain, that urge to mate, that sexual part of a woman that needs to kick in order for her to be sexually attracted to you and be attracted in a manner that makes her want to get sexual very, very quickly. Okay, so when does sexual attraction happen? As everyone who knows my teaching knows, social comfort comes first. And social comfort basically means 3 to 5 minutes of a normal conversation where you make the person comfortable and they have a superficial, superfluous level of rapport with you. That means basically if I came in after 3 to 5 minutes, they would go, oh yeah, he seems like a nice guy. That's what you have to do first. That comes before sexual attraction. Sexual attraction can only occur when there is already some social comfort present. So once you build sexual comfort, you're going to break rapport to start the attraction process, and specifically the sexual attraction process. Luckily for us, demonstrating sexuality is a way to break rapport, because generally when two people are interacting, it's not polite or necessarily the most socially comfortable thing to start talking about sex. However, it does start that attraction process. So does teasing, back turns, push pulls, takeaways, any various way that you're going to break rapport. But the point is, you don't start the sexual attraction process right after the opener. You get into a normal conversation first, and then as soon as you can tell that that woman or group of women is comfortable with you, that's when you start to break rapport and build sexual attraction. If you try to attract women sexually too early, you will end up getting blown out because you're going to demonstrate sexual neediness. And sexual neediness is the biggest turnoff women have. You have to think about it from the terms of an attractive woman. Attractive women can have sex whenever they want, wherever they want, usually with whoever they want. So for them, the idea of sexual neediness or being sexually desperate or really, really wanting some particular sexual opportunity is, it's like trying to understand a supermarket if you're an Ethiopian. It's just not, it's outside of your reality. It doesn't make any sense. Women's lives are literally a drive-through window of cock 24/7. So if you start trying to get sexual too soon, or you get sexual in the wrong way, you demonstrate that you're looking for sex or that you're trying to get sexual with her because you don't have very many sexual opportunities, you're not a man who, you know, is sexually satisfied, and you see the fact that she's attracted as an opportunity, you're going to blow yourself out 100% of the time. So be aware of that. Sexual neediness, huge, huge turnoff for women. You never want to be sexually pushy. You have to learn the line between being aggressive sexually and being pushy and needy. And you will have to mess that up a few times to understand it. But once you get it, you'll understand how to be properly sexual in any situation. All right. Now I want to move on and talk a little theory here before we get into the meat and the tactics. I want to talk to you guys about the five triggers of sexual attraction from doing thousands of hours of research and reading every book under the sun on attraction, from Sexual Selection Strategies, which is an out-of-print book I found in a used bookstore, to Sperm Wars, to Why Women Have Sex, to Queen Bees and Wannabes, to the female brain, to, you know, various female submission books and books on fetish culture. I figured out there are five triggers of sexual attraction that are proven and that actually hit the primitive part of a woman's brain. So the five triggers of sexual attraction are, number one, social dominance, being socially dominant. We're going to talk about each one of these triggers in depth in a few minutes. So for now, social dominance. Number two, sexualized stereotype. And I don't just mean your clothing. When I mean a sexual stereotype, I mean you fit into a style of seducer. You seem like a guy who she would go to for sex, who knows what he's doing sexually, who she's going to have a good sexual experience with. Number three, social proof / status. Social proof, social status, demonstrating those things trigger that primitive part of a woman's brain, because human beings are hierarchy-based creatures. Number four, sexual confidence. Being able to demonstrate sexual confidence is a huge trigger of sexual attraction. A sexually confident man triggers that part of a woman's brain. We'll talk about why that happens. And lastly, arousal. Actual sexual arousal, which can happen verbally or physically. So let's dive into these a little bit more. Number one, social dominance. So what does it mean to be socially dominant? When we talk about sexual attraction, remember, we're talking about primitive brains. So human beings as creatures evolved in terms of social hierarchies. If you look at any sort of mating with any sort of creature, be it, you know, baboons, be it, you know, wolves, anything, the social dominance and the social hierarchy determines the sexuality. If you look at our society as a whole, who gets the hot girls? Your people at the top of the food chain, your famous actors, your rich guys, your athletes, the ones who are more socially dominant trigger more sexual attraction. You can see it when you look on the MySpace or Facebook of like famous people. You'll see girls like throwing themselves at them, like blatantly sexual. You'll see groupies, you know, ovulating on All-Star Weekend. So demonstrating that we're socially dominant is one of the biggest factors of sexual attraction out there. Dominance is the number one clinical factor in attraction. In every study that they've ever done on attraction, the dominant male is the one who gets the majority of the mating and access to resources. Like, dominance, and especially social dominance, is the number one trigger of all forms of sexual attraction in any study that's ever been done. So I cannot overemphasize how important sexual attraction is as, I'm sorry, social dominance is. So let's talk about some things that make you socially dominant. Number one, loud, clear voice. Making sure that you're loud enough and that you're speaking over everyone else. When you talk, everyone shuts up and listens. The louder you speak, the more likely that's going to happen, and the clearer and slower you speak, the better that's going to work. If you have an accent, you need to work on that, because people need to be able to understand you, and you need to talk loud. Number two, control of the conversation, the material, and the focus. So let's talk about control of the conversation. That means that you're going to hold court, as we used to say back in the day. That means you're going to be the focus of the conversation. You're going to direct it in terms of its material, meaning what you talk about. Meaning you're going to talk about yourself, the girl, the group, the night, whatever you want to talk about. It's your responsibility to direct the conversation where you want it to go. And then the second part, the focus. And the focus of the conversation is where the attention is, right? So in any social group, one person is going to be the center of attention, the center of focus. And that's what we want to be. So that might mean being louder. That might mean tapping people. That might mean using check-ins like, you know what I'm saying, or you have heard that, right, to get people's attention. But staying in control of the conversation in terms of material and focus, a big demonstrator of social dominance. Being self-assured and self-amused, that's another big sign of social dominance. Self-assured means you're not qualifying yourself. You're not asking if they're okay. You're not worried about their reaction. You're not looking for them to tell you that everything's all right or validate what you're doing. Self-amusing means you're doing things that you're interested in, that you're having fun doing, and you don't really care what the reaction is. You're not looking for a reaction as much as you're a socially dominant person, and when you talk to any group of people, regardless of who they are, this is how you talk. Fourth point for social dominance, being in control of yourself, your emotions, and the situation. Someone who's socially dominant is always in control of himself. They're never going to get emotionally reactive towards other people. They're not going to get offended if people are not treating them the way they want to. They're not going to let anything affect their good time. That's part of being self-amusing and in control. You want to be in control of your emotions. The person who gets an emotional reaction from the other person wins. So by being emotionally unreactive, by not letting people get you down, by having a relentless attitude of positivity, you demonstrate social dominance. You show that you're not affected by the situation. You affect the situation. And lastly, the situation. Showing control of the situation, showing you know what's going on, you're not worried, you're not frazzled by anything, you're not thrown off, you have a plan, you're always leading. Leading is a huge sign of social dominance. Leading a girl around, leading a group, leading the conversation, leading the physicality and touching, you always have to be leading to demonstrate that social dominance. Super, super important. Being socially dominant is huge. Next, we have giving off a sexualized stereotype. So this one is something that a couple of other people talk about. You know, Brad P. talks about dressing like a sexual stereotype. The idea of being a sexual having a sexualized stereotype is that you look like a guy that she either would have sex with, or you look like a guy that she's always wanted to have sex with. So that goes beyond your actual dressing. It goes to the way you're going to act. It goes towards your attitude. It goes towards your overall niche, as I like to think about it. You know, some guys, their niche is they like to go after club girls, and their whole thing is that they pretend to be famous, or they have an entourage, and they act really self-important. Other people, their niche is that they are the vagina mechanic, right? And their thing is they make girls squirt. And so for a certain type of girl, that's a sexualized stereotype for them, you know, or they're very spiritual. Other guys, you know, are really high-powered, you know, alpha male, rich guys. Other guys are artists. Other guys are Rastafarians. But there's a ton of these sexualized stereotypes out there. And the key to triggering sexual attraction in the women you like is this sexualized stereotype. If you don't fit into a sexualized stereotype that a woman could imagine herself having sex with, you're already partially in trouble off the gate because you're now going to have to convince her to go outside of her own preconceived ideas of archetypes that are attractive to her and her preconceived sexual fantasies. So it's really important that you pick a character, that you pick someone that you, some sex symbol out there that you can relate to, and you start to develop all of your things to move in that direction so that when a girl meets you, she can say, okay, I'm going to sleep with this guy because he's an artist or because he's a rock star or because he's a, you know, metrosexual or because he's a high-powered corporate guy. But having that stereotype and then the attitude behind it so that as she's interacting with you, it's all congruent and it plays into the female fantasy and she can project all of her sexual fantasies onto you. If you have a blank canvas, it's really hard for women to project their sexual fantasies onto you. If you have a canvas that looks like every other guy she's ever been sexually attracted to, you have a much better way to start. Next, social proof / social status. I think everyone who's ever studied dating knows what social proof is. It's basically the idea that you have a lot of people who think you're cool. Right. A form of social proof is known as pre-selection, which is that you're seen with a lot of girls who seem to be interested in you. There have been a million different studies that show that social proof inspires groupthink, competition, and feeding frenzies. So social proof is a big key to sexual attraction because people do what's called sorting by like. If they see a lot of people around you, especially a lot of attractive women, women are going to assume there's something interesting and attractive about you because, after all those women couldn't be wrong, right? So that's the groupthink aspect. So that sexual attraction gets triggered because of not the groupthink, but because of the competition and the jealousy. The competition and jealousy hit that primitive brain. Jealousy is a very primitive emotion. It's something that is very hard to stop and very hard to deal with. So social proof inspires jealousy, which inspires competitions, which leads to what I like to call feeding frenzies, where you'll actually see girls fighting over guys and who gets to take them home. I myself have had several girls fighting over me in a single night and ended up, you know, having sex with three or four girls I met in one night at a club because I started these feeding frenzies and inspired jealousy with the use of jealousy plot lines, having girls see you with other girls, leaving conversations with girls in bars and clubs to go talk to other girls. I know a lot of guys are like, well, won't she think I'm a player or won't she think that, you know, I'm not really for real? No. Social proof, social status, these two things are proven triggers of attraction. They're consistently scientifically proven over and over and over again. So don't be afraid to make girls jealous or to use social proof as much as you can because they're really bazooka techniques. I want to briefly talk about social status too, because social status builds an authority frame which triggers compliant sexual attraction. What that means is that social status, again, what I said before, human beings as primitive creatures evolved in social hierarchies. The higher you are in the hierarchy, the more authority and compliance you're going to have with those lower in the hierarchy. So if you, for example, know the manager and three bouncers at a bar and you're talking to a girl and she sees you talking to people who work there, or bartenders or whatever, your sexual attraction in her eyes is going to raise because you are higher in the social hierarchy than she is. Same thing if you are locally famous or if you, you know, like I do stand-up comedy and when I try to pick up girls after I've been on stage, there's a huge difference because the social status of being on stage triggers this sexual attraction. So having social status allows you to build this authority frame which generally shows the girl that you are higher up in the social hierarchy, so you know more about what's going on, and therefore she should listen to you. So social status is a real big trigger as well. That's why I included it with social proof. They're both two sides of the groupthink coin. When people see you as higher status, or when people see you with a lot of other people who think you're cool, you trigger sexual attraction. Next, sexual confidence. Sexual confidence is a really big thing. That's why we had that call on the sexual anxiety last week, because sexual confidence needs to be demonstrated in order to get the girl to open up sexually. Demonstrating promiscuous behavior and attitudes engages what's called the go first principle and allows women to open up sexually. When you talk about sex first in a normal, non-horny, non-sexually needy way, it encourages the woman to do the same thing, because based on the psychological principle of reciprocity. If I tell you something about my sex life, you're going to be way more likely to tell me something about your sex life later on down the line. So by demonstrating that you are promiscuous, you also demonstrate a lack of sexual judgment. By talking about the fact that you've had one-night stands or that you've slept with girls, or this, that, or the other, and obviously you're not going to do it as shotgun as I just did there, but by cleverly demonstrating this stuff, you are demonstrating a lack of sexual judgment. By showing her that you're okay with having a one-night stand, or that you, like, one of the things that I always talk about is I met my ex-fiance on a one-night stand. I slept with a girl the first night I met her, and then we ended up getting engaged for two tumultuous weeks, and horrible idea. But that's a great story for demonstrating sexual confidence, and I'll share some other ones later on in this call. I'm going to give you some specific word-by-word things, but it helps you go first, it gets that reciprocity working, and it also demonstrates that you're not sexually judging her. Being willing to discuss your own sex life in non-sexually needy terms builds a massive amount of sexual attraction, because, like I said before, that sexual attraction mechanism is a primitive part of the brain. You can only talk about sex for so long without that primitive part of the brain starting to kick in, because any sexual thoughts get filtered through that reptilian brain, that primitive brain. So even if the idea of sex with me is not yet attractive, the idea of sex is always attractive, because that primitive part of the brain that's saying mate, spread your genes, is always there and always working. So that's sexual confidence. And the fifth trigger of sexual attraction is arousal. And arousal is an unconscious feeling that is a physical and mental process beginning with warm, blush-like feelings and leading to vaginal lubrication. Arousal can be achieved verbally or physically, but there are actual things that are arousal triggers in women, things like having her hair pulled, things like talking in a deeper, lower voice, things like sexual eye contact, things like sexual rapport mirroring, where you act like you and the girl have already been sexual, things like assuming a sexual relationship already, things like dirty talk, things like, ambiguities, baiting, all this stuff that I'm about to teach you guys in the next little bit. But the idea of getting the girl actually physically aroused is a major part of the sexual attraction system, because at some point we want to get her body working. It's like this. A lot of people believe that emotions lead to physical actions. Well, they're actually wrong. Physical actions are much stronger than emotions. It's the difference between talking to a girl about her being aroused and actually arousing her, pulling her hair, biting her neck. The physical sensations can only be held back for so long until they take over, and that primitive brain just has that urge to mate. The same way that guys, when they're physically aroused, at some point you need to get off. Girls have the same thing. There is an arousal threshold at which point the girl can no longer hold back, despite the, social or reputational consequences. So be aware of the fact that arousal, that physicality, is not a bad thing. That physicality overpowers all the emotions, all the feelings, all the intellectual kind of constraints and ideas. So those are the five triggers of sexual attraction. Those are the things that we're always going to be thinking, you know, do I have social status or social proof? Am I being socially dominant enough? Am I demonstrating sexual confidence? All of that is kind of the theory behind what I'm about to teach you guys, which is the 10 tools of sexual attraction. So these are going to be techniques, tactics, word-for-word routines that will allow you to start getting that sexual attraction today, tonight, if you go out after this call, and to start teaching you guys how to sexualize your interactions as quickly as possible for the best results possible in the quickest amount of time. So quickly, I'm going to run down each of these sexual tools, and then we're going to go through them one by one, and I'm going to give you specific routines, things to say, et cetera, et cetera. So in no particular order, the 10 tools of sexual attraction are reverse gender stereotypes. Reverse gender stereotypes are things where you take a well-known stereotype that women, that men have about women or that women have about men, and you flip them on the other side. You flip the script, so to speak. This is interesting because it allows you to get sexual really quickly, and it also allows you to use humor and to also start setting up, getting rid of objections to sex. The next one is labeling and pushbacks, giving girls antisocial labels, giving girls things to push back against, forms sexual attraction because it builds your social status. By labeling a girl and getting her to push back against it, she's going to start qualifying herself and she's going to start seeing you as higher status. We also are going to talk about bait. Bait is really good because it's ambiguous. It's confusing. It allows, it makes girls think about things and possibly go sexual because they have to interpret things, and with enough interpretation, everyone comes back to sex. So bait is really important. We're going to talk about movement. Movement is huge to the process of sexualizing an interaction because movement allows you to build compliance. It allows you to touch in a sexual way. It allows you to get into isolation. It allows you to get the girl out of the bar. It makes her feel like she's known you longer. Movement's really important. We're going to talk about escalating role plays. We're going to talk about using a ladder of role plays that escalates from being friendly and playful to being sexy and fun and allowing further escalation. We're going to talk about sexualized storytelling, telling sexual stories that don't creep girls out, that don't make them feel weird, that don't make you seem sexually needy, but that demonstrate that sexual confidence. We're going to talk about using statements of intent to really trigger those feelings of lust, to really trigger that sexual part of the woman that gets turned on, and that sexual anticipation that leaves her dripping. We're going to talk about relationship ladders. This is another idea of the use of a ladder concept. Here we're going to talk about using commitment and consistency to build sexual attraction. We're going to talk about sexualized teasing. Sexualized teasing is one of the best tools for sexual attraction because it allows you to use humor to diffuse sexuality but get it into the conversation and get the girl aroused. And we're going to talk about sexualized touching, which is our number one arousal tool. So let's start with sexualized touching. We all know about touching in terms of releasing and making sure that you end the touching first and that you don't do anything to creep the girl out and that you make bigger moves and all of that stuff. But when I want to talk about sexualized touching, I want to give you about 5 specific points. The first specific point is touching with sexual intent. Touching with sexual intent means the touch is going to be a little firmer. It's going to linger a little longer. You're going to make stronger eye contact when you're touching the girl. You're going to graze parts of her body seemingly by mistake, whether it's brushing a boob as you go to hug her, whether it's lingering on her butt a little too long, whether it's, touching in areas that are sexual but not quite, like the inner thigh or the nape of her neck or the collarbone. Touching with sexual intent leaves no doubt about your desires. It's a lingering, slow, seducing, sexy touch that should feel really good and be really slow and sensual. The idea is sensuality. It should be smooth and soft. The next thing I want to talk about is sexual rapport mirroring. Sexual rapport mirroring. Sexual rapport is what goes on with a girl that you're already having sex with. I realized this when I was out with a girl I was seeing and another couple who were friends of hers, and both of us were doing things like wiping things off the other person's face, sharing glasses, you know, touching under the table, doing like overtly, covertly arousing things where no one could see them, getting closer in space, you know, touching the face, touching the neck, touching the small of the back, things that you would do with girls that you're already having sex with. So when you're trying to build sexual attraction, you want to start touching the girl and interacting with her as if you've already had sex. That means things like rubbing, maybe scratching her back or arm or inside of her legs, caressing her hair, playing with her hair, you know, caressing lightly her on the back or the legs. The next thing is skin-to-skin contact. So that could be like arm-to-arm. It could be hand-to-hand. It could be, you know, like getting, sitting really close to her so that your arms are touching or your knees are touching, or your legs are touching. If you're making out with her and you can like pull your shirt up a little bit and pull her shirt up a little bit and have your stomachs touching, that's another great thing for building sexual attraction because it triggers that primitive feeling of what it's like when you have a naked person on top of you and you're having sex with them. And demonstrations of strength. Showing the girl your physical dominance is a really good way to trigger sexual attraction. So like lifting, picking the girl up. One thing I used to do is guess how much the girls weighed, and then pick them up, you know, or, you know, tell the girls you're out to pick up chicks and then actually physically lift them up. That kind of stuff is really good because it demonstrates, it throws them a little out of control, which triggers that primitive sexual part of the brain. That helplessness and that kind of raw sexuality. So demonstrations of strength, skin-to-skin contact as much as you can have it, rubbing, scratching, caressing, mirroring sexual rapport, and touching with sexual intent. If you make those five changes to your touching, you will start to trigger a lot more sexual attraction. That brings us to the next part, which is sexualized teases. Sexualized teases are teases that are sexual in nature and seek to show the girl that she could not handle you sexually or she's in some way sexually lacking, right? The idea of sexual teasing is that it allows you to use humor to soften the blow of sexuality. A girl can't get offended at something if it's a joke, if it's obvious that you're not sexually judging her, but you're just teasing her and joking around with her. But by making your jokes about sex, you get the agenda of sex on the table early, and when you go back to discussing it later, it's going to be a much more easy to digest subject than it would have been if you hadn't started by making a joke about it. So don't be afraid to throw these sexualized teases out really early in the interaction. One of my favorite things to do if I'm talking to a girl at a bar or a club is I'll accidentally spill a little bit of my drink on her. Not enough to like actually like get her gross or anything, just a little bit on her hand, and then they'll say something like, oh, you spilled your drink on me, you know, or I'm all wet or something like that. Or if she doesn't say I'm all wet and she just says you spilled your drink on me, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm sorry, I got you all wet. I have that effect on girls. It's a great idea, a great example of a sexualized tease, right? You know, so I might say something like, oh my God, you're blushing. Don't worry, I have that effect on girls. The whole idea is that you're demonstrating that she sexually wants you or that she's sexually interested or that she sexually couldn't handle you. Those are the frames for sexualized teasing. So I'll give you guys a couple of specific lines. My favorite sexualized tease of all time is, whoever your last boyfriend was clearly did not spank you enough. Or, I don't know who your last boyfriend was, but he did not spank you enough. Or, if you're trying to force a boyfriend objection, if you have like a time constraint for day game or something, your boyfriend obviously doesn't spank you enough. Because that way she'll say she doesn't have a boyfriend if she doesn't have a boyfriend. That's a really good one. I would totally destroy you. That's another really good one. Oh my God, I would totally destroy you. You'd be like walking crooked for like a week. You know, like you're tiny. You would not be able to handle it. I'd be too much for you. You wouldn't be able to keep up. You know, you're too young. You probably like you're probably still having like high school sex. You would not be able to hang. I would totally destroy you. Another one is I'll make fun of the girl for having kind of lame milquetoast type sex. So I'll say something like, oh my god, you're totally the missionary position lights off girl. You're totally the sex only on anniversaries and special occasions girl. Like, you're totally the, like, no sex except on the weekends girl. You know, you're totally like the, you know, leave her clothes on while she's having sex girl. Another one of my favorites. Look, if you want to throw your panties at me, just get it over with now. You know, I have a weird effect on women. Or, like, look, don't propose to me right away, okay? Just, like, I think that's creepy. Or, like, look, if you're going to stalk me and be obsessed with me, like, and I'm intimidating you, just, like, please let me know so I don't get weirded out, right? Like, if you want to throw your panties at me, the idea is that being in your presence kind of makes her sexually turned on and makes her want to compete for your affection. And lastly, one of my favorites, this is, like, the assume the sell tease. Right, so I go, look, you know, we're getting along really good, but I'm not going to come over after the bar closes to, like, check out your stereo or whatever. I'm a good boy. You know, look, lady, like, you're really nice and all, but, like, I'm not going to come check out your etchings or, like, you know, watch a movie with you after the bar closes. I've been fooled by that before. I'm a good boy. So that's sexualized teasing. Don't be afraid to tease girls in a sexualized way. Sometimes they'll get offended, but more often than not, they're gonna get turned on by it. And it actually demonstrates sexual confidence. It builds your social status, because when you tease someone and you get away with it, you basically set the frame that you're a little bit cooler than they are, so you're a little bit higher status. And it allows you to start arousing the girl because you're talking about sex, which is an arousing concept. All right, let's move on. Next thing I want to talk about is relationship ladders. So relationship ladders basically are a series of commitments you're going to get the girl to commit to based on escalating levels of intimacy. So there's four levels in the relationship ladder. And they are friendship, hitting on her, trying to get in your pants, and when we have sex. So the idea here is that human beings are bound by the psychological principle of commitment and consistency. So what that means is that if someone agrees to something, they're going to be much more likely to do it than if they never agree to it, right? And if someone agrees to one thing, then they're going to be more likely to agree to the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing. And that's how people end up with, you know, $10,000 in extras on their car that they didn't intend to get at the car dealership. And that's how, you know, people add on fries and drinks and all sorts of stuff at fast food restaurants. And all of the various things that happen are because compliance, consistency, and commitment all build momentum and all make you more likely to say yes in the future. So we want to step a girl through this four-step relationship ladder over the course of about 25 to 35 minutes. And this builds a huge amount of sexual attraction, because eventually it gets the girl to imagine having sex with you, and it gets her to passively accept you hitting on her, which is an intriguing and arousing concept, and the fact that you're trying to get in her pants, which is also arousing to her. So we want to start off with friendship. And by locking down friendship, all we want to do in this case is we just want to start by forming an easy friendship. You know, it doesn't even have to be a real thing. You don't need to get her phone number or anything like that. But you can say something like, you know what, you're awesome. We're totally going to be friends. Even better, if there's some activity you're discussing that both of you like to do, like karaoke or, you know, running or hiking or playing tennis or going to certain types of concerts, You label her as that's what you guys are going to do. Oh my god, you're going to be my new karaoke friend. You're going to be my new 80s cover band friend. You're going to be my new hiking friend, right? And we're going to go do this, that, or the other. And you make like a fake plan, but you don't get a phone number or anything or that or the other. The whole point there is just to get the girl committed to friendship, committed to the idea that our conversation's not going to end here. We're going to be friends outside of this conversation. So after that, the next step is you want to get the girl committed to letting you hit on her. And so the idea here is that you want to get her to accept your statements of intent, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. And the idea is that by telling a girl you're hitting on her or telling her that you're going to hit on her in the future, She's passively agreeing to let you escalate. If she doesn't leave or end the conversation, she's giving you permission to try to get her into bed. And that's going to really help you. So I might say something like, oh my God, you've got to stop being cute or I'm totally going to start hitting on you. Or, you know, don't get any ideas. I will hit on you in a CVS in the middle of the day, you know? Or, oh my God, like, you were really cute. I got to leave before I start hitting on you. And then again, she laughs and giggles and accepts it and you move on to the third step. And the third step is trying to get in your pants, right? So here we're going to demonstrate that we're interested in her sexually. Right? We're not just hitting on her. We're not just going to be friends. We're actually interested in trying to get in her pants. So I like to tack the trying to get in her pants relationship ladder onto the back of a compliment. So when I'm qualifying the girl or complimenting her or whatever, I might say something like, you know, you are really awesome. And I mean that even though I'm trying to get in your pants. Or, you know, you are really, it's really, really cool that, you know, you're going to school for psychology and you have freckles. And I mean that even though I'm trying to get in your pants. Or, you know, I'm really glad that we met because I think we're going to be really, really good friends. And I mean that even though I'm definitely trying to get in your pants. So I hope that no matter what happens, we can still be friends. Right? The idea is you're getting her committed to the fact that you're trying to have sex with her. Now, at any point, if the two of you ever hang out later on that night or, you know, on a date, she knows the agenda is on the table. She knows that eventually you're going to try to have sex with her. And that allows her to get ready for it and allows her to kind of control the pacing and be comfortable and sexually open up in a way that's fun for her. And the last step of the relationship ladder is the kind of assuming the sell. And so this is something that you're going to do kind of either right before you bounce the girl or, you know, before you invite her back to your place on the date. You know, not directly in front of it, but like maybe like half an hour before you're going to invite her back to your place. You say something like, when we have sex, you know, it's going to be amazingly hot and melt the paint off the walls. You know, I can already tell. Or, you know, when we have sex, you have to promise not to wake my neighbors. Or, you know, when we have sex, you have to promise not to leave any marks because you seem like the type of girl who leaves marks. Or when we have sex, you have to promise to take it easy on me because I can tell you're like wild between the sheets, right? But the idea is you're getting her committed to a when we have sex. The more ridiculous you make the when we have sex, the better. So you could, sometimes I'll make a joke out of it. I'll say something like, when we have sex, you have to promise only one midget and two monkeys, okay? Like I don't want any more repeats of the situation last time. Or when we have sex, you know, you have to promise not to laugh at the fact that my penis is only like a quarter of an inch hard. You know, you can't even see it like soft, so don't even worry about it if it disappears, right? But the point is you're getting her to accept the idea that you and her are going to have sex at some point. And if you can get a girl accepting that, it's really just a matter of a private location and physical escalation. All right. Like I said last time, the next thing we're going to talk about, the next tool for setting sexual attraction off is the statement of intent. So statements of intent are really what I like to think of as prepping statements. They prep the girl for further escalation. They let the girl know what you're planning on trying later. Statements of intent are really effective because they don't give anything for the girl to object to right now. It's not a statement of intent if you tell the girl you're about to kiss her and then you try to kiss her. That's just bad game. It's not a statement of intent if you tell the girl that you want to fuck her. That's not a statement of intent. It's not a statement of intent if you tell the girl she's hot. It's not a statement of intent if you tell the girl that she's really turning you on. Statements of intent are specifically prepping statements to let the girl know to prepare for escalation. They passively set the frame that you're going to escalate and it's up to her to decide if she's going to be open to that escalation or not. So, statements of intent are things like, you're so sexy. There's nothing really to object to in you're so sexy, or, you know, it's too early to tell you this, but I really think you're sexy. Or I shouldn't say this, but you are so sexy. I hate it. I am totally thinking about kissing you, and I know that's not appropriate right now. Like, I have to pay attention. Like, I'm definitely getting distracted because I'm totally thinking about kissing you, which is not appropriate right now. I definitely want to have sex with you eventually. Like, I'm totally hitting on you. I'm totally trying to get in your pants. I'm super attracted to you. I definitely want to see you again. These are all statements of intent because they prep the girl for what your intentions are. The whole point of the statement of intent is that it clears up your intentions for the girl so she knows what to expect. She's not surprised and she's not playing the whole, like, shopping buddy, here comes the dick game that a lot of times happens with value-based or emotional attraction. Statements of intent let the girl know you're interested in her as a man is interested in a woman, not as a shopping buddy, not as a friend, not as a, you know, friend to go to clubs with. Statements of intent prep and they passively set the frame that you're going to try to escalate and it's up to her whether or not she accepts it. Number six in the tools of sexual attraction is sexual storytelling. Telling sexual stories demonstrates sexual confidence. I used to call these things like indicators of promiscuity, letting the girl know you're down to fuck. I had a whole bunch of kind of ideas of how and why you do this for a long time because I told progressively out more and more outrageous sexual stories, and as I did that, I got progressively better and faster results with hotter girls. So it was like a weird thing for me for a while. I thought it was something that only I could get away with or just part of my personality or like my confidence or whatnot. But I've now taught it to other students and seen other guys tell really sexual stories and get really, really good reactions with it. So sexual storytelling is a little bit different because you're going to have some specific kinds of sexual stories that work and some specific kinds of sexual stories that don't work at all. So let's start with the kinds of sexual stories to avoid, right? Number one, stories about being great in bed. Stories about how you gave this girl so many orgasms or, like, girls always tell you you're the best they've ever had or, like, you know, you made a girl squirt or this, that, or the other, like, that. All those things are bad. All those things are going to come off like you're qualifying yourself, like you're sexually insecure, and, like, you're trying to convince her through value that you're sexually worthy. Another kind of bad sexual story that guys tell, the one time I got laid story, like telling a story about a one night stand or like how you met this girl and then you ended up fucking her a few days later, like those are not good stories either. With sexual storytelling, the story has to be interesting enough that if it wasn't sexual, you would tell it anyway. The sexuality should be a byproduct of the story, not the main focus. The main focus of the story can't be one time I got laid. Obviously anything overtly graphic, not good, right? Obviously anything about sexually transmitted diseases, not good. Anything about pregnancy, not good. Anything about gross girls you had sex with or really hot girls you had sex with, don't get too into details. And lastly, stories that indicate that you don't know what you're doing in bed. Also, sometimes guys try to be kind of self-defacing, and that's not a good idea when it comes to sexual storytelling. So let's talk about what kind of sexual stories you can tell. And I'll give you guys a couple of examples of ones that I've told. You rejecting a girl sexually. These are my favorite kinds of sexual stories. So my favorite one of these involves this girl I was dating back in Dallas who was a stripper, and she came over one night with four girls at like 3 a.m. She had gotten off work at her strip club, and she came over with four other girls, and I was asleep, and she like knocks on my door, and she comes in, and she's like, yeah, we're ready to party. She's like, all these girls are like down, and it's her and four other girls. There's five girls at like 3 a.m. And I grabbed my comforters and dragged myself out to the couch and told them to have fun in the bed. I was just not having it. I was like, it's 4 a.m. I can't even like begin to think about a six sum or whatever. I couldn't even do the math. That's a story I tell all the time. You know, I'll say something like, yeah, you know, my ex-fiance was bi, and guys always think it's really cool to like have a threesome or foursome until their girlfriend brings four girls home at 3 a.m, in which case you realize maybe not the coolest thing in the world. A sexual story that happened to a friend. This is, I tell another story about my friend Carrie. My friend Carrie is like the biggest playette in the world. And she, you know, a couple months ago, she went home with a guy and she, the the next morning, like, they had sex and she let him spend the night, which is like a rare thing for her. And the next morning, he like looks at her in the morning and goes, "It's so good to finally have a girlfriend. Like, I'm so glad that we're now dating." And she ended up kicking him out, which I thought was really funny. So again, happened to a friend again, but make sure that they're not overly graphic or anything like that. Embarrassing sexual stories. This is my favorite. Because these build apathy, empathy. Apathy would be good. We never want to build apathy. We don't want that. But, these build empathy, right? So I might say something like, "Yeah, oh my God, the most embarrassing thing happened to me. You know, me and my roommate were like sorting through old DVDs and stuff, and I guess he found the DVD me and my ex-girlfriend made of us having like crazy sex, and like he popped it in front of like him, his girlfriend, and like four of our other friends. Most embarrassing thing ever. Like, I've never wanted to die more than in that moment. Oh, so weird. Like, what's the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to you sexually?" And by getting a girl, by first demonstrating your sexually embarrassing story, the principle of reciprocity kicks in, and a girl is going to be more likely to explain her most embarrassing sexual story as well. And lastly, just funny sexual stories. You know, like, I have a story about how, like, me and this girl were trying to have sex and we couldn't find an empty bedroom. We were like in a summer house, you know, and, you know, there were like four other couples and one of the couples stole our bedroom, and then like we couldn't figure out which one it was because we were drunk. It's a pretty funny story, but the whole point is it's funny. It's not overly graphic, you know. Sometimes I'll tell the story of how I slept with someone I shouldn't have, you know, and that's like a funny story too. I'll be like, "Yeah, you know, last night I went home with someone that I really shouldn't have, and like it's kind of fucked my whole day up, you know." And I can go from there. So the idea is the types of stories to tell: funny, embarrassing, happened to a friend, or you rejecting a girl sexually. Stay away from stories about being great or bad in bed, stories about how one time you got laid, or overly graphic. But again, don't be afraid to throw sexualized stories into your conversations with women, because more often than not, they're fascinated and love them. Next, I want to talk about the concept of escalating role plays. So everyone should know what a role play is. It's basically a fake fantasy scenario that you play out with the girls that allows proper distance and objectivity for escalation. You know, so you might say something like, "You know what I'm going to do with you guys? I'm going to take you I'm going to dress you up in like a red PVC devil suit with like horns and a pitchfork, maybe even like a little tail, and then I'm going to put your friend in like a white angel suit with like wings and a halo, maybe even a harp. And then I'm going to walk you guys down the street arm in arm and let you guys argue it out over what's going to be more fun. And I think she'd win, right? Or, you know what? You guys are going to be my new fan club. Like, you guys' job is going to be to keep everyone away from me, make sure no one gets too close, no one asks for autographs, and make sure only the hottest girls can come talk to me, because, like, it's really difficult being, you know, an aging teen idol. Or, you know what we're going to do? I'm going to put you in, like, PVC leather from head to toe, put you on my spaceship, and make you my space princess." Right? The idea is it's just a funny, playful concept. You know what we're going to do? We're going to fly to Greece, put on togas, and sell hot dogs on the beach. Well, those are really good because they're fun. They get women out of the moment. They're emotional. They're funny, and most guys don't do them. But there's an even better way to use role plays, and that's to use a role play ladder. Because, again, if you can get a girl to accept one role play scenario, you can get her to accept another one, and you can progressively make them more and more sexual and allow them to make more and more escalation happen in the disguise of the role play. Because, after all, it's not her doing this. She's playing a role. And anytime you can get a woman to play a role, you can get her to do things that she wouldn't normally do or act in a way that she wouldn't normally act because she's playing a role. So I'll give you an example of one of the escalating role plays that I use. So you heard one of them. Start off with the angel devil. I go, "You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to dress you up in like a red angel suit. Or, I'm sorry, a red devil suit with like PVC leather, horns, a pitchfork, maybe even a tail. Then I'm going to dress your friend up like an angel with white wings, a harp, maybe even a halo. And I'll dress you guys, I'll walk you guys down the street arm in arm, and I'll let you guys fight it out over what's going to be more fun to do. The idea of the first role play is that it's going to be what I like to call a group role play, right? There's going to be three different distinct categories of role plays that we're going to use in order to escalate things. So the first one is a group role play within her own group. So you're going to include everyone in the group, her, her friends. If there's guys there, you include them. And this is just fun and playful. They should be giggling, laughing, having fun with this. Then we're going to use a me and her role play, what I like to call a conspiracy role play, an us against the world role play. So my favorite one is you're going to be my new girlfriend for the next 10 minutes. So I'll be like, come on, you know what? You're going to be my new girlfriend for the next 10 minutes. So we're going to go on our first date over there by the bar, right? And then I'll play that up for like 10 minutes. I'll be like, okay, now we're on our first date. I want to know everything about you in 2 minutes. I'm like, your entire life story in 2 minutes. Okay, good. Now, you know, like, I feel like we should talk about our hopes and dreams for the future. You know, I want to have a relationship with you plus like 9 other women. So I'm thinking you'll be like Thursday. And you play it up, everything that you would do on a date, but you shrink the date to like, you know, 3 or 4 minutes. So that's a really fun role play. And now you've gotten the idea of her being your girlfriend, the two of you together. There's some sort of a relationship going on into her head. Even though it's not real, it's still sort of real because the subconscious mind can't tell the difference between the two. And then you're going to want to do what I call an other group role play. And the other group role play is really the key to escalation. Because now what you're going to do is you're going to make something where you and her are going to go try to convince other people that you're a couple. My favorite one is we're going to go over there and try to convince this group of people that we're married and we just found out you're pregnant. And we don't know what to name the kid. And I want to name it Summer, and you want to name it Seven. Okay? And the great thing about that is that when you include the other people in the role play, they're more than likely not going to believe you, especially if you make it unbelievable. So I'll, like, joke about how she lost a couple pregnancies because I threw her down the stairs, or, you know, this is our third pregnancy because she likes to drink, or this, that, or the other. But the idea is you don't want the new group to believe you, because when they don't believe you, they're going to throw out tests for you. They're going to say things like, yeah, if you guys are a couple, kiss, you know, or you can do that yourself. You can be like, look, if you guys don't believe us, we'll make out right now. And almost every girl will make out with you in that situation because she's now in the role and she's not doing this to convince you, but she's doing it to convince other people. But at the same time, she's getting turned on, she's getting aroused, and she's escalating with you. So again, the idea is group role play, you and her role play, and then another group role play where you try to convince those people that you guys are a couple and that you guys are together. You know, you can try to convince them that you're just a girl she sleeps with, that you're her pimp and she's your whore, that, you know, anything like that. But the idea is that you guys are in some sort of a relationship so that they'll test you and say things like, yeah, if you guys are in a relationship, make out. Think when girls tell you they're lesbians, right? Like every lame dude is like, oh, you guys should make out then. But yeah, again, so that's the idea of an escalating role play ladder. A group role play, you and her role play, and then a role play involving other people. Next thing I want to talk about, next tool for sexual attraction is movement. Movement works because it builds compliance and makes women feel like they've known you longer. Generally, if you move a woman around a venue twice, she will be 10 times more likely to leave that bar with you, or a coffee shop or anything. But movement makes women feel like they've known you longer, and it also builds a massive amount of compliance. It also changes the way the relationship is. If you meet a girl in one bar and you take her to another bar, when you arrive at that second bar, you're with her, you're not a stranger, and that changes the entire dynamic. Also, it establishes isolation and a conspiracy against the group that can accelerate sexual situations. Trying to make the girl a co-conspirator in running away from the group can really escalate things sexually. Sometimes I'll say things like, yeah, you know, it's a shame your group's going to cock block us, you know. Maybe we can, like, keep hiding from them, and we'll just keep moving all around the bar. And I'll move a girl 3, 4, 5 times as we, like, hide from her group. And you'll be amazed how often I'll be like, let's go take a walk out of the bar, and then I walk them straight into a cab and into my apartment because they've moved so many times, and we've got this whole idea that we're hiding from her friends, and that use of movement builds the compliance and momentum to make that work. Next, bait. Bait is really important because bait encourages women to invest in the interaction, which gets them working, which gets that primitive brain going and that competition where we work hard enough for something and we want it. And it's also ambiguous enough to allow women to go sexual by using baiting statements like, oh, I can't even tell you what I'm thinking right now, or I totally had a naughty thought about you just now. Too bad I don't know you well enough to tell you. Or, oh my God, I should totally not tell you this. Or, I could totally imagine you, oh, never mind. Or, oh my God, you know what they say about girls who wear thumb rings? Or, you know, what are you talking about? What are you looking at? Why are you looking at me like that? All of these statements bait for sexuality, and they encourage women to go sexual, and they give them a place where they can interpret things sexually if they're sexually interested, right? If you bait a girl and she goes sexual, you can tell that girl is sexually attracted to you and that you can start to escalate things really, really quickly. So baiting statements, I can't tell you what I'm thinking. I totally had a naughty thought just now, I can't tell you. I could totally imagine, never mind. Oh my God, you have no idea what I'm thinking right now. Or, ooh, wow, that's a really interesting thought, but I do not know you well enough to talk about it yet. All of these things bait girls. What are you looking at? Why are you looking at me like that? What are you thinking? What does that mean? All of these statements, all of these types of bait really allow women to go sexual. The next thing is antisocial labeling. Antisocial labeling gives the girl an unflattering identity to push back against and can be used to establish an authority frame, your social status, and get the girl to qualify herself sexually. So my favorite three antisocial labels, and you can come up with your own, anything that a girl would not want to be that's not an insult, right? You can't really insult girls with antisocial labelings. You can't be like, oh my God, you know, you're like a really big loser. No, I'm not. I'm not a loser, right? It's not insulting. It's just giving her a label that isn't necessarily bad, but is not necessarily the way she wants to be seen. So my three favorites are labeling the girl as shy. You know, like, oh, I can tell you're shy. I bet you're not used to guys hitting on you. Like, probably, you know, I can tell that, like, it's really hard for guys to get you to come out of your shell. You know, you're definitely like a very reserved person. What's going to happen? That girl's going to push back and go, no, I'm not shy. I'm really outgoing. Like, I'm crazy. I definitely have a crazy side. It just takes me a while to open up. Next one, prude. Calling a girl prude, one of my favorite things. Also, intimacy issues. I'll just say, no, I mean, you know, it's really, like, obviously you're a really cool girl and you're really hot, but I can just tell you're a little prude, you know? Like, maybe you have, like, intimacy issues or something. I don't know. Maybe you got fucked over by a last boyfriend. But again, when you call a girl prude, watch how fast she'll push back against that. And my personal favorite, calling her a playette, a girl player, right? That's one of my favorites, right? I'll be like, oh yeah, you know, you're like the girl who like goes and hits on all the guys and like gets everyone's number and gets guys to buy her all drinks. Like I can tell you're like a little playette. You're like all about like collecting guys who like hang out and like think you're really cool and that you never sleep with. Right? She'll be like, no, I'm not a playette. No, I'm not like that. I don't have orbiters. Like, I don't do that. Again, antisocial labeling is just one of the best techniques for getting a girl to qualify herself, which triggers sexual attraction, and just building your social status. By giving a girl a label, you're just assuming that you have high enough status that you can label someone. And a lot of the time, you'll be correct in that assumption. And now we come to the last of our tools for sexual attraction, and that is reverse gender stereotypes. So reversing gender stereotypes is great because it throws girls off. It's funny. It allows you to sexualize conversations really, really easily. It allows you to tease her in a sexualized manner that she probably hasn't heard before. It allows you to build that arousal because you're talking about things, and it also gets objections out of the way, right? It kind of takes anything that a girl could say to you off the table that we don't want her to say. So some of my five favorite reverse gender stereotypes. She's going to get me pregnant. That's my favorite one. I'll be like, look, if we keep talking like this, like, one of us is going to get pregnant. And I really, like, I've already had two abortions this year. Like, just don't look at me like that, because I get pregnant if girls even look at me. Okay? I didn't take my pregnancy pill this week, and really, I'm not ready for a baby. So please, you know, don't flirt with me that much. She only wants me for sex. Right, like, look, yeah, you know, you're going to pretend to be all into me tonight, and then, like, as soon as we have sex, I'm never going to hear from you ever again. That's all, you girls are all the same. All you want is sex, sex, sex. Like, I have real feelings and stuff, too. She's not going to respect me in the morning. This is one of my favorites. I'll be like, look, like, I really like you, but you're going to think I'm a slut tomorrow if we do anything. And, like, you're not going to respect me in the morning, and it's really important. My reputation is, like, really important to me, because I'm not, like, a bad guy, you know? Like, I'm not a slut. Like, you have to respect me in the morning. I need dinner and a drink to put out. That's, like, one of my favorites. Like, if a girl asks me a question, I'll be like, look, I don't answer that question without dinner and a drink. Like, if you think you're getting anything more than a good night kiss tonight, like, you have another thing coming. Like, I need to be wined and dined in order to have sex with someone. Just keep that in mind. And lastly, I'm on my period, so nothing can happen tonight. That's one of my favorite ones as well. I'll be like, look, just so you know, like, I love in the middle of an interaction being like, look, I'm on my period tonight, so just know nothing can happen. You know, like, it's the wrong time of the month to meet you. Like, normally I would be super into this, but it's the wrong time of the month. So reverse gender stereotypes, great way to build sexual attraction. Okay, let's recap everything we've gone over in this call. We defined sexual attraction and explained where it fit in an interaction. We explained the 5 triggers of sexual attraction, namely social dominance, sexualized stereotype, social proof, status, sexual confidence, and arousal. And I explained the 10 tools of sexual attraction, namely sexual touching and teasing, relationship ladders, statements of intent, sexual stories, escalating role play ladders, movement, bait, antisocial labeling, and reverse stereotypes. What that means is that it's time now to give you guys a couple of exercises to do before the next installment of this course. Exercise number 1. I want you to pick one sexual attraction trigger, namely socially dominant, sexual stereotype, social proof, social status, arousal, sexual confidence. Pick one sexual trigger. Then I want you to write out a normal approach that you would attempt. Write out what you would do, where you'd see a girl you want to talk to. Maybe you see a girl in the gym. Maybe you see a girl, you know, on the street. Maybe you see a girl at a club. Write out your normal approach that you would do, basically word for word or concept for concept. Then I want you to go over it and rewrite it to maximize the sexual trigger. Namely, how could I be extremely socially dominant in this situation? How could I tailor myself to fit her sexual stereotype? How could I have higher social proof or social status? You know, how could I have demonstrated more sexual confidence, et cetera, et cetera? And then I want you to repeat that for the 4 other triggers. This is going to give you a great idea of what you need to know on an approach-to-approach basis to maintain a really high level of these sexual attraction triggers. Because the more of this stuff you're doing naturally and without thinking, the better it's going to work. And by really writing out what it would look like and feel like to be socially dominant or have a better sexual stereotype or higher social proof or status, you get an idea of things to look for when you're in those situations, and it's kind of like mental rehearsal. So that's exercise number 1. Exercise number 2 is I want you to pick 3 of the 10 tools of sexual attraction that you're going to practice in the next week. And then I want you to use 1 tool at a time. So if you decide that you want to use sexual storytelling, sexual teasing, and relationship ladders, then you're going to go out this week, one day, and your goal is every girl you approach, you're going to use the first one of those tools. Let's say sexual teasing. So you're going to go out and do 10 to 12 approaches, or however many approaches you're going to do, usually 10 to 12 if you're going to a nightclub. And in those 10 to 12 approaches, your only goal is to use sexual teasing every single time. Then, the second night you go out, your goal is to use sexual teasing every time, and then to add the second tool, sexual storytelling. So you're going to sexually tease every set, and then you're going to tell a sexual story. Not necessarily right after each other, but those are your goals in the set. And then after you do that in every set for a night, you're going to add the third tool, and so on and so forth until you are using all 10 tools of sexual attraction with no problems, and you have a full and fluid understanding of how to build this incredible sexual attraction in a woman quickly and easily. That's going to wrap up our second installment of the Seduction Roadmap here, guys. I hope you guys got a ton out of this call. I know this is one of the more information-packed calls I've ever put together, and the PDF that you guys are going to get in a couple days is going to really blow you away with all the information that was in this call. Hopefully you guys took notes, and if you have any questions, please email me, sin@sinsofattraction.com. I won't get back to you, but we have the Q&A call coming up in 5 weeks, and on that call, I will be answering every question that I got from you guys. So keep sending them. We have a file of them from the first week. I think there's like 3 or 4 of them. Send in any questions you have. If you don't get a response, don't panic. I will answer every single question on our Q&A call, the last call of this session. So with that, I implore you guys to get out there and use this information. There's a lot of stuff in this call that you can apply right now, today, to start meeting more beautiful women and getting them into bed. So don't hesitate. Don't think you need to listen to the call or the PDF again. Go out there. Use this stuff right now. Start meeting women. Hope all of you have a great week, and I will be back next week on the third call, which I believe is about sexual framing. So have a great week and weekend, and I will talk to you next week. Bye.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. For help with guest options, press *0. The moderator has not yet joined the conference. Please stand by.